13. Tellisburg Cathedral and Royal Palace, City of Tellisburg, Kingdom of Carus. The organ began its majestic prelude, and the hundreds of people crammed into Tellisburg Cathedral rose to stand in their pews. The glorious notes sped through the incense-scented air on golden wings of sound, and then the choir burst into song. The cathedral's doors swung open, and the familiar Wednesday morning procession of scepter-bearers, candle-bearers, and thurifers moved forward into the welcoming splendor of that majestic hymn. Acolytes and under-priests followed the procession's advance guard, and Archbishop Michael Stainer followed behind them in turn. Merlin Athrawes watched from his post in the royal box, 20 feet above the cathedral's floor, with familiar mixed feelings. The church was so much a part of every Safeholdian's life that moments like this were inescapable, and sheer immersion seemed to be wearing away at least some of his original outrage. But only some of it, he told himself, only some of it. The procession moved steadily, majestically forward, and the archbishop moved at its heart. But Michael Stainer's idea of a proper procession wasn't quite like that of other archbishops, and Merlin smiled as Stainer paused to lay one hand on the curly-haired head of a little girl in blessing as her father held her up. Other hands reached out to touch the archbishop as he passed, and other children's heads awaited his blessing. Those sophisticated other archbishops would undoubtedly have looked down upon Stainer's simple-minded pastoral abandonment of an archbishop's proper dignity. Then again, those sophisticated other archbishops would never have been the focus of the intensely personal love and trust Michael Stainer evoked from the people of his archbishopric. Of course, there were... Merlin Athrawes's thoughts broke off with guillotine suddenness as purposeful movement swirled abruptly in the cathedral's nave. Archbishop Michael laid his hand on another youngster's head, murmuring a word of blessing. He knew his frequent stops provoked generally tolerant exasperation among his acolytes and assisting clergy. On the other hand, they knew better than to protest, of course, even if it did make the proper choreography of the church's ironclad liturgy a bit more difficult. There were some responsibilities and joys of any priest's calling which Michael Stainer refused to sacrifice to the dignity of his ecclesiastic office. He turned back to the procession, bowing his head, while one corner of his mind once more reviewed the day's sermon. It was time he began emphasizing that the sudden coalescence of movement took him as much by surprise as it did anyone else in the cathedral. His head snapped back up as someone's hands closed upon his arms. The two men who had abruptly forced their way into the procession jerked him around, turning him to one side, and he was far too astonished to offer any sort of resistance. No one ever laid hands upon the clergy of Mother Church. The action was so totally unheard of that every worshiper in the cathedral was just as astounded as Stainer. Only those closest to him could actually see what was happening, but the abrupt interruption of the procession turned heads, snapped eyes around. The archbishop's mind worked more rapidly than most, yet he was only beginning to realize what was happening when he saw the dagger in the third man's hand. The dagger, which, in defiance of every tradition of the Church of God awaiting, had been brought into the cathedral concealed under an assassin's tunic.
"In the name of the true church!"
the assassin shouted, and the dagger started forward. Caleb Armagh's mind also worked more rapidly than most. The king came to his feet, one hand reaching out in futile protest as the dagger flashed.
"Michael!"
he cried, then flinched back as a cannon fired less than 6 inches from his ear. That was what it felt like, at any rate. Caleb lurched away from the concussive impact hammering at his eardrum, and it fired again.